We can welcome to SBS Radio's Armenian program.
Nice to be talking to you again.
Weekend, a few weeks ago, a joint Armenian-Japanese function was held in Los Angeles. Could you give us some information about the function, who organized the event, who was present, and the topics discussed?
Yeah, it was organized by the American-Japan Society in conjunction with the Armenian National Committee of America Western Region and with the support of the Japanese Consul General of Japan in Los Angeles. And the event was held at Vertigo in Glendale, and we had about at least 100 dignitaries in the audience. It included like the mayor of Glendale, a number of judges, a number of prominent individuals in both the Armenian and Japanese community, and also representative of politicians, such as congressmen. It was a very successful event, and it was to pay tribute to Japan's humanitarian response to the Armenian genocide, and in particular, the work of a very prominent Japanese individual, Viscount Eiichi Shibusawa. And along with me, there was Shibusawa's great-great-grandson who spoke as well. And so, yeah, it was a very successful event. And it was cross-cultural as well. We had an Armenian woman, girl with a traditional Armenian outfit, and a Japanese woman in traditional Japanese outfit. And there was Japanese food, Armenian food. So it's kind of like an intercommunal, cross-cultural event, a very successful event.
And what was the subject of your talk?
The subject of my talk was Viscount Eiichi Shibusawa and the Armenian relief movement in Japan. And it was basically on Eiichi Shibusawa is considered the founder of modern Japanese capitalism. He was involved in over 500 Japanese companies, and he was the first person who established a joint stock company in Japan in the late 19th century. And he was the president of Japan's first bank. He was involved in many businesses that still exist today. And on top of that, he was also a humanitarian. He was involved in about 600 welfare organizations. And because he was an ardent believer of Confucius philosophy, where he was able to fuse Confucius ethics with market capitalism. So he believed that, you know, it's not just about greed-orientated profit, is that you need to give back to the community, you need to give rights to workers. So he was very big on social justice, humanitarianism, as well as, you know, being a capitalist at the same time. And the reason why my speech was about him is because in 1922, he was the chairman of the Armenian Relief Fund of Japan, which had been established thanks to an American guy by the name of Reverend Loyal Lincoln Wirt, who was the international commissioner of the American Near East Relief Organization. And Wirt traveled to Hawaii, Japan, to other countries in the Pacific, such as China, Korea, the Philippines, and even Australia, with the task of establishing Armenian relief committees to join in with the American Near East relief effort on behalf of the Armenian refugees and orphans. So when he came to Japan, he was enthusiastically received by Eiichi Shibusawa, who straight off gave him a donation of $11,000 towards the Armenians, which translates to about $150,000 in today's terms. And he accepted to become the chairman of the Armenian Relief Fund. And because he was such an influential and prominent individual, he was able to get other leading Japanese businessmen, including royalty, to participate in the Armenian relief movement. And interestingly, there was a Japanese school that sponsored two Armenian orphans at that time as well. So there was a movement of Armenian relief in Japan that's largely been hidden. And so my talk was about him and other aspects of Japan's humanitarian response at that time.
Mm-hmm. Do we know how long it lasted, the relief effort?
Yeah, unfortunately, we haven't found like a central archive of minute details of the relief fund. But we know that in the mid to late 1920s, there was reference to the Armenian Relief Committee of Japan. So I would say it would have lasted till the Near East Relief organization lasted, which was until 1929. And after 1929, the Near East Relief Organization became the Near East Foundation, which still exists today. But I'd say it would have lasted till, you know, the late 1920s.
Mm. How difficult it is to research at the Japanese archives if you don't know the language?
The difficulty with humanitarian history is that there is no central archive where you can go to, unlike military history. So you pick up little fragments from things that you read, secondary sources or other primary sources. So in the case of Japan, most of the information that I've been able to gather is through Near East Relief publications that were published at the time, but also through the Japan Advertiser, which was an English daily circulating in Japan in that period. And a lot of them have been digitized now, so you can access some of the newspapers online. So it's those two avenues that I've been able to gather information on this. But having said that, I mean, until you wrote your thesis on the Australian press coverage of the Armenian Genocide, mm-hmm. we had no idea about Australia's humanitarian response. But since then, because we conducted more research, we found out much more details as we located archives. So the Japanese, the research is in its very early stages. So it is quite hard because of the language barrier, mm-hmm. but in time, hopefully, someone with knowledge of Japanese can do some further research in Japan.
Mm. When historical Japanese-Armenian ties are discussed, the name of Diana Apkar is always mentioned. Could you give us more information about her?
Yes, sure. Look, I'm not an expert on Diana Apkar, but what I do know is that she was an amazing woman, a writer, a businesswoman, and a diplomat. And in between 1918 and 1920, she was made the consul of the Armenian Republic in Japan. She was originally born in Burma, but she had moved to Japan in the late 19th century. And during that time that she was ambassador, because she represented a state, she was able to use that in order to have a dialogue or liaise with the Japanese state. She was able to help many Armenian refugees that had sought refuge in Russia or in the eastern part of Russia, come to Japan and as a transit place to move on to other places like the United States. So her role as an Armenian diplomat in Japan at that time saved many Armenian refugees. And another issue too is that Japan was a signatory to the Treaty of Sèvres, which, because at that time Japan was allied with the British and French during World War I. So I'm not sure about her influence on that, but she was quite an influential woman at that time. There is her great-granddaughter is producing a documentary which should be completed this year that tells the whole story of Diana Apkar. She was just a really amazing woman.
Mm-hmm. Is there any other information you'd like to share?
Yeah, another major Japanese link to the Armenian Genocide was the rescue of Greek and Armenian survivors of the Smyrna catastrophe in September 1922. And that is something that we did talk about that night at the tribute. And my colleague, Misak Kelesian, also spoke about that. And so in September 1922, there were over 20 warships in off the shores of Smyrna while Smyrna was being burnt. And you had hundreds of thousands of refugees who were stranded on the quay, and many of them throwing themselves over into the water, and majority of the Allied warships were not allowed to take on the refugees. They were only there to rescue their own nationals. But there was a Japanese freighter in the harbor, and we have multiple eyewitness accounts to this, where the Japanese ship, the captain, asked for all the cargo to be thrown off the ship, and it had a lot of expensive cargo like laces and silks, and they accepted refugees without examining their papers or whatever. And there were hundreds of Armenian and Greek refugees who were rescued at that time by this Japanese ship and taken to Greece. And we do have descendants today who remember their great-grandparents or grandparents saying that they were saved by a Japanese ship. And most notably was an Armenian organist for the Boston Philharmonic Orchestra, whose name was Berd Shamgochan, who passed away many years ago. But in the 1980s, he went to Japan as part of the orchestra. And out of nowhere, he got up on stage at one of the concerts, and he started to talk about the story of his father, of how he was rescued by the Japanese ship at Smyrna. And we showed that video at the tribute event last week, and it was very, very moving to watch that. It's available on YouTube. You can download it. But so it was a very successful event that we held, and as far as I know, it's kind of unprecedented where two communities come together like this to discuss their common past through the humanitarian bond.
Any plans to do similar functions here in Australia?
Yeah, quite possibly, because this should be something that Armenian communities should do all around the world, is thank those countries and those peoples who came to our rescue during the time of the Armenian genocide. Sadly, much of our resources and scholarship has been focusing on the evils committed and trying to prove that it happened, and that's mainly due to Turkey's continual denial of the atrocities and the genocide. But what we should be focusing on is how the Armenian issue is linked to the social and cultural history of other countries, such as Japan, such as Australia, who rescued Armenians at that time, and it's very, very well documented. So that's what I plan on doing, and just again, not just with the Japanese, but with all those nations who came to the rescue of Armenians.
Mm-hmm. Vikian, thank you very much for the interview, and looking forward to hear more about this interesting connection.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much, Vahe.